I've got a, just a sort of a collection of odds and ends here. Before I do, sitting in there listening to Henry talking about this trip, I'd like to volunteer to advance that trip. I don't know what arrangements you're going to make, but it sounds to me like it may be a little out of the ordinary. And don't need any response from you, but it's something I'd sure be interested in doing if it works out. School desegregation, we've got monumental problems, and they're going to get worse as we get farther into the fall. Morgan is pretty well on top of it. I'm going to have a woodshed session with Elliot Richardson shortly. But you should just be aware that all is not well there. It's the typical problem that we've had right along, except it's a little worse than it was last time. George tends to put a good face on it because of the citizen committees and so on and so forth. But Morgan tells me that we have some very serious potential political problems that have just got to be watched very closely, because the damn HEW bureaucracy is going to screw us if we aren't awfully careful. So, no, I don't think so.
Basically, you have my absolute backing on
this. Oh, I know. I know.
You've got like a hole in the head.
Well, I've got several things. Elliot's boat's beginning to leak a little bit. And we've got several places that we've got to sharpen up.
This is one of those.
Oh, yeah.
He's done a great job trying to hold it together, but the damn place is full of spots.
That's right. Well, this is beginning to show up some,
is it?
Yeah.
And you got to chop away.
So we'll keep on it, but you should be aware of the fact. And we took a little rap in Austin the other day, and there's a case in Dallas that's given us problems. And Texas is one of the really serious situations. So I've told Morgan.
Why the hell are they screwing around in Texas?
Well, they've got some of the worst swan case type problems of any place in the country.
That's just too bad.
And it isn't up to us to leave them alone. Most of these are private suits, and we get dragged in by the court. Yeah. So anyway, there it is. On the $1 billion, Morgan's strong feeling is we'd be better off not to get that money right away.
Good.
And so our secret strategy is to delay it. Elliot is doing his best to shake it loose. Edith Green is doing a lot to delay it, and we're planning it. Well, I'm damned if I know why she's delaying it. It doesn't make any sense. But what our fear is that we would get the money, and then we'd have to go out and buy a lot of buses with it. Well, we're going to slow it down, keep it buzzed up, delay it as much as we can. If the Congress really does adjourn in October, as they're talking about now,
October.
Yeah, that's what the leadership's talking about.
Adjourn?
Yes, sir.
What the hell are they going to do that for?
Well, that's their strategy, is to the last request for rules, according to the letter that the House leadership sent out the other day, will be October 1. And
they're
October 15 adjourn.
What they're really up to is to rock the voice of the
Chinese. Sure. Start right in
the Democrats.
Start in the early primaries. And, now, if that's so, they'll never
also get out and get up and give us a long economy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just roam up and down.
Not do it at this time. Thank God we've got the China.
Well, I think we can beat them over the head on early adjournment, too, with a lot of unfinished business.
So,
but at the same time, I want you to know that we're trying to slow that money down, because you'll be hearing from people about what a tragedy it is and all this kind of stuff.
Play the game. Just do it without getting caught at it.
That's right.
But let me say, I couldn't agree more, and I know that Schultz and Glenn and all the rest of you.
You'll hear a lot about it, I'm sure.
I'll just give it lip service.
Okay.
I'll have to check to see.
Family systems.
You just find a way to screw it.
On family systems, John Williams has been hired as a consultant to the Senate Finance Committee. And there's a lot going there. There's a lot of problems. And so I'm aware of your sentiments on this thing, and we'll continue to do what we can to get your result. On the conspiracy, quote,
on family services, you probably read that. I talked to Conley about it yesterday, and he says, well, I think he was got on this because I really don't know. It's not going to study. He says, my gut reaction is that it's a loser. But he said, on the other hand, the present program is a loser. He said, so maybe that's so we ought to enforce something. But he, I said, well, if we're not so damn sure, then why don't we go with the loser or something that isn't going to help us politically? Put it in about John in its crassest political terms, let's face it, in its crassest political terms, do you think family assistance will help us?
No, it doesn't show up on any of the polls. Or
what we're talking about, what about people that go on, they see the Moynihan used to make the point, well, the working poor all get on, they get now start getting checks and they'll all be for us. I don't believe they will be.
No, the makeup's wrong. They aren't our people. They aren't our people, basically.
They are people that are just basically not going to vote for us. Well, when you say that, you can't generalize that.
Well, to some extent you can. Yeah. Under $8,400, the damn few Nixon voters in that group. On all the demographic breakouts, we just don't show up.
At this point, was they're damn few, but there could be a hell of a lot more.
Well, all right. If you can go to them and make the argument that you put money in their pockets and translate that into votes, that's an assumption I'm not willing to make at this point. I don't. In the first place, I don't see you making that argument, and I don't know of anybody that will make it for you.
That's the problem.
And secondly, I'm not so sure that translates. The guy says, "Gee, I got this check, and I never got a check before, and that's a good person that did that."
Now, on the other side of the coin, are you all that convinced that the goddamn thing will work?
No. Matter of fact,
I've been thinking a lot more since, you know, we've had this one experiment, Wes, but let me tell you my concern about it. My concern is that
this is one of the things I've talked to Elliot about. I've left him on a call. I told Bull not to bring him on the
show. Oh, I see. Fine. As you know,
right.
And we don't get on. Sorry, that's okay. Thank you. Well, let me tell you this. It gets back to something that is really very fundamental. With all of our concern about poor hungry kids and the poor, charity, etc., etc., I have a strong conviction that there is a point where societies become basically bread and services, and then they go downhill. I am convinced that welfare generally is bad. Bad because, not because the fact that somebody gets something for nothing. In other words, I like to see them get the food and the clothes and the rest. But bad because I think it does something to the character of a person and of his family, of his attitude. That's what I'm concerned about. Now, if I feel that way, if I believe that, I just can't in good conscience get a lot more people thinking in welfare psychology terms. I go back to see my own family, and I think of the, and I look back, and it was goddamn foolish on their part. But as I've told this before, but as I remember, my brother was sick for 5 years, and my folks refused to send me to Olive Sanitarium. It was the county tuberculosis sanitarium. It was much better than the one they could afford. We sent him to Hillcrest, or kind of broken. And my mother took him to Arizona for a couple of years, but that almost broke us. But they said, we are not going to accept public charity. Now, probably as a result, he might have lived, I don't know, I doubt it. They had nothing that could help. But on the other hand, looking back, what we went through then was a damn good thing for us. I just believe it was. guess it's not for public charity.
But follow up the other line of reasoning. You've got a lousy system right now. It's going to bleed the economy white if it's let to run the way it goes.
Correct.
So it's got to be changed, and so everybody agrees on that. So the only question is change to what?
Yeah.
And then the question is, what should this administration stand for? What should we be in favor of as a change?
Yeah.
And when you get to that, then you're right up against a kind of a national assumption that you can't eliminate welfare. So what you really talk about is a substitute system of welfare in this country. Substitute for what we have that eliminates a lot of the abuses and is fiscally sound and doesn't offer a chance for runaway costs in the future. So we say, all right, we want a system that will put people on payrolls. And one of the principal abuses is that it's better to be on welfare than to work under the present system. So what do you do about that? Well, you put premiums on working, and you put penalties on welfare. And that's, of course, this whole working poor thing. That's how we got into it in the first place, was to try and get a motivation to move people toward working for a living. Now, if it's correct, if our assumption is correct, if that's what will happen, that more people will go to work, because they make more money going to work than they do being on welfare. All the incentives are in the direction of work. Then it's oversimplification to say that we're introducing a lot of people to welfare. Where what we started out to try and do was introduce a lot of people who are going back to work. Now, we can still make the argument that that's what we're doing. If you ask me the question, will it work? And I've had one of my guys named Kavanaugh, who's come from HEW, look into this for me to find out what they're doing about implementing the damn thing. And it's enormously complex to put into effect. And he's just given me a report that is very, very discouraging. He says they're in terrible disarray over there. They don't know what the hell they're doing about putting this thing to work. That's one of the things I've got to talk to Elliot about at great length. Because this guy comes back and just says it's a shambles. And the worst thing that could happen to us right now would be to have this legislation adopted, because we're not ready to implement it. So that's something we've got on our plate to really get into. And I've got to, as soon as I do some checking and make sure that Kavanaugh's right, I've got to get with George.
But at the present time, let me say, can we frankly second?
Yes, I think without very much effort that it can be hopelessly delayed in the Senate, certainly this year. And then in next year, because Long is going in one direction, Ribicoff's going in another. Ribicoff's got a lot of expensive amendments he wants to add on. And I would say almost certainly we can hold off until after adjournment.
Then in our budget, what do we just dump it next year?
I think we have to keep showing, unless we can say that the Congress, against our will, has precluded the possibility of its being adopted. But
that would be more my inclination.
The Kavanaugh study.
My inclination would be just to say, well, because of this Congress's attitude, it's unrealistic to put it in. And what I would do this, I would back off. Here's what I'm going to do in the next budget. If the Congress doesn't pass it in this session, I'd say that I've tried twice, and we've been sunk twice. Therefore, I would put it in on a trial basis. In other words, put the trial basis in, and then we're not backing off of the goddamn the trial basis with all the work requirements. I just think that's the way to do it, John. That would be something to goddamn thing. See, look, even Ray can support that.
Okay.
I really feel that's what we should do. So get the thing delayed this year.
All right.
And then let's have a trial. Because listen, let me tell you honestly, I think we ought to have a trial. Could we learn something from
that? Oh, definitely. And if the Kavanaugh study is right,
yeah,
if they are in such bad shape on management, Elliot may very well support us on that. He may have to admit that he can't pull it off, and that we ought to go to the trial. So I'll try and pull that one off.
Good.
Because if we can get him on our side on that, it'd be a lot nicer all the way around. He had a good meeting with Reagan. I talked to Reagan's people about it afterward. And there's some remaining questions, obviously. But I don't think Reagan is going to blast us on welfare reform right now. They're still talking. And Reagan wants to talk to you the next time you're in California.
Should I be there in August?
Yeah, that's what I told him. Well, if you declare publicly that you're going to have a vacation, then I don't think you'd have to have the appointment. I think it could be done here or some other way.
I think it'd be better being here.
Yeah.
Where you have some advantages, doesn't
it? Right. You remember you gave Marty a lecture about Ivy Leaguers in the Justice Department.
Yes, I did.
So he went back to check and see how it stacks up. And it's really pretty good. It's predominantly non-Ivy League, as defined as Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Cornell, Penn. Total, 84% not Ivy League, 16% Ivy League. And then it breaks down by U.S. attorneys and so on. Of our appointees, heavily non-Ivy League by 4-1, 5-1. So he's got the message. On our conspiracy, ICORD does not want to have this in his committee. He's going to run for governor, and he needs liberal support. He says he's got all the conservative support he needs, and this scares him. On the other hand, Hebert and Ahrens are definitely interested in appointing a select committee of their committee.
Haven't they?
And we're talking to them. We've got an agreement with them that we'll take a couple of weeks to analyze what we have. And then we'll sit down with Ahrens and Hebert. I've told Ahrens that I would like him to pick out a bushy-tailed young congressman on that committee, the junior guys, that he has some confidence in that we could use as a sort of a manager of this thing. And he said he would try and do that. Well, they've got a pretty good staff.
Yeah. Could I suggest that this is a place for an outside counsel?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Going for a top outside counsel who wants to make himself a hell of a reputation. There must be somebody, John, you know what I mean?
Right.
Outside counsels have done very good jobs sometimes in this other field.
All right. In any event, Krogh and his guys are going to pull together the evidence. And in 2 or 3 weeks' time...
They are working on the evidence.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And what he's trying to do yesterday and today is get around...
How does it presently stand?
Well, there are a lot of leads. There are all kinds of leads.
Did you find anything? How did Cook come out?
No. And I'm afraid Elliot's got some jam on his face, where Cook is concerned. Cook spent 14 hours with Ellsberg.
I want him to come down, call the senator's office and his secretary, and tell him the president would be delighted to have him come by any time, and that I'll be here and see if he can come down this afternoon, and that I'd like him to have a picture with him. But, see, maybe this afternoon or something, you just arrange it. I said, well, 14 hours with Ellsberg.
Right. I don't know when. But this is, in fact, I'm not terribly familiar with all the details of this, but they're on it, they're into it. Kleindienst sat with Cook yesterday on the ground rules for the polygraph test, and there is to be a polygraph. Kleindienst personally interviewed Richardson on it, and is not at all satisfied with the answers he got, and wanted to know if it would be all right to talk to Bill Rogers about it, because the contention is that the secretary approved of this process, but Dick says that from the way the story is unfolding, he doesn't think that Rogers really did approve of the process.
He didn't.
Okay. Well, that was my hunch. That's what I told him to go ahead and do.
You don't think this is just Richardson talking about that case involving
Cho? Well, that's why...
Couldn't have talked 14 hours about Cho.
No, that's the point, you see. There just wasn't that much material. And so that's what's got Kleindienst's wind up. He's on this now because he thinks they were together too long to be credible in that context. So anyway, that's underway. Senator Mathias would not give up the National Security Council papers that he didn't volunteer to. Now, nobody's made a demand on him. And
I think that you should ask Rogers to move on to him. I think really that's the best thing. I think Rogers is willing.
Okay.
You need to talk to Rogers about it.
I have. Talked to him on the airplane, but not about that. Not about that.
You call him and say, look, will you go see him? Will you talk to him?
All right.
And doesn't just put it at that level. If the son of a bitch doesn't do it, then we demand it.
Well, I think it's rapidly coming to the point where we ought to just put it to Mathias. And
or
say,
do you want to talk to Rogers? Maybe then we should just demand it.
Well, I think...
ask Rogers' judgment.
All right. I think that's treating Mathias with kid gloves unnecessarily.
All right.
Hell, Ellsberg delivered the documents to him. There are documents.
Right.
And it seems to me that somebody like Kleindienst or me or somebody ought to just say to Mathias, please return.
Aren't you Kleindienst rather than you? One step away from us.
Okay.
It's a cold turkey.
Okay.
And if he wants to turn it down, then we'll have to take appropriate action.
All right. I had a long talk with your brother and then with your nephew, Don, about his European adventure.
Yeah.
He's a weird kid, if I may say so. He's strange.
I haven't seen him.
No sign of that, but very, very odd guy. He told me he'd been spending some time with Huey Newton, the Black Panther. Told me that he had tried to phone Chu En Lai about 10 days ago. And, just a lot of things of that kind that really, strange. So what I did, I don't have any grounds for telling him not to go to Europe. There just isn't anything all in all. But what I did do was ask the CIA to surveil him and to give us a monthly report. And I just talked to him like a Dutch uncle. I just really tried to make it very plain to him that...
What the hell did he say we should call him to online about?
Well, about the war. He decided that the way to get this war settled would be to go right to the top, and he just couldn't sit around and see us continue the way we were, so he picked up the phone, put in a long-distance call. I understand.
But the point is, what do you do with a kid like that? You really ought to put him away, shouldn't
they? I don't know what to do with him. He's a keg of dynamite.
Huh?
He's a keg of dynamite. He could go off, any minute. I told him not to talk to the press, for instance. He said, well, he kind of enjoyed matching wits with the press.
Oh, shit.
And,
Jesus Christ.
So I've talked to Don since then.
I don't know whether Don can control him.
No. He obviously can't.
Don's trying, and that's why he came to us.
Yep.
And, Don, that's the point. Don asked me to talk with him. He thought I could control him. I don't even do a bit of good.
No, I don't either. I don't either.
In fact, I think he'll broker it.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm a little afraid he might broker me. And
it ran through my mind. That's at least not quite as bad.
That's right.
But basically...
Well, he's going over there this week. He's going to...
Why the hell are these people taking him?
Oh, well, pretty obvious. This guy that's taking him is an associate of Robert Vesco. Robert Vesco is a fellow that moved in on Kornfeld, IOS. It turns out, I had an investigation done in Europe. It turns out that he has held himself out as being a business associate of your brother's. Now, the brother that was reported to me was Eddie. So when Eddie was in the office the other day to talk about the library, I said, did you ever have anything to do with a man named Stroud? And he said, no. Well, then he talked to Don, and Don phoned me and said, well, I've had some business dealings with Stroud. I'm in a land syndicate with Stroud and Vesco on some land down in Lutheran, some recreational land. So that was all news to me. But... he's the kind of a guy that will exploit this kid as your nephew, and I'm reasonably sure. Now, I've told the kid that he's going to get set up, that he's going to be used, that it, they may try and frame him with either a woman or a man, that he has to assume that people are going to overhear his conversations, that and so on, and that he's got to carry your colors, that he's just got to be very circumspect. But I just feel like I was hollering down a well, frankly.
He just didn't pay attention.
Well, he listened, but in the end, he bridled a little bit, because I said, you can't talk to the press, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. For instance, he said, now listen, when you fellows, it was right after the China announcement, he said, when you fellows get this thing all settled with China, he says, I want to be one of the first ones in there. Just think of that. There's 800 million people. What a market. He said, there's a lot of money to be made there. And I said, my friend, you will be one of the last people to go in there. He said, why is that? And I said, well, just look how it looks if the president's relatives are the first ones into China on a commercial basis. Well, he said, that's not fair. And I said, I didn't say it was fair. I just said that's the way it had to be. So that was the way our conversation went. And I tell you, he's a potential problem. And so we'll keep on him.
Is there anything else you could do? Of course, Marriott is hiring Don. I guess Don's apparently working out all right with him. I guess. I hope so. I hope Marriott feels
good. I've not heard any of the contrary.
Is there anything else we could do with this little son of a bitch?
I don't know.
I mean, if you could just find some way to pinch him or... No, I agree.
Well, I know. That'd be the ruination of it if he had any kind of income. See, he's run up a big debt in California.
Yeah.
And so part of this trip is to get away from his creditors. And I really feel more comfortable with this, with the agency watching him than I would if he were roaming around this country talking to Huey Newton. If I thought we'd get him committed, that would be the best answer, I'm frank to say, but I don't think we can. Well, anyway, there's that one. It's a bitch, and I...
Well, Don knows it, apparently. Don, at least Don.
He's quite sensitive to it.
Yeah. Does he know you're bragging and doing all these things?
I filled him in on this, and he didn't realize it. First, he didn't know anything about the phone call in China. He was just appalled. He was just taken apart. And he said he'd check into it, and I said, Don, there isn't anything you could do. You know, he said, Dad, I just want to know what, he says, for nothing else, I want to know who paid the phone bill. But he said, Kalmbach can help us on this. Kalmbach gets to Europe pretty regularly, so I'll use him on it. On consumer sentiment, this thing that was discussed in here this morning, Eddie Harper has given me a memo of a session on consumer sentiment that he was in that makes some interesting points, and I'll just leave it with you, rather than to route it around through George and son. It's a little bit of an unorthodox angle on this whole business of consumer sentiment. So there it is.
This is an analysis of the various polls.
No. This is a report from a consumer poll man that in a seminar that Harper was in. And he just passed it along to me for my information, but I thought it would be of some interest to you. It's this whole question that was raised here this morning, of what people are thinking and what the administration can do to respond to these passions.
We get the, the media you said through this morning.
All of it.
Have you ever really seen such an impressive group of people? You know, I was just thinking this small, I was just thinking that, and I didn't really ask for it, but here with Henry sitting there and all the rest and with the whole band world applauding and so forth, wouldn't you think that one of them would have said something?
Yeah.
And say, well, look, Mr. President, we've got confidence in
him,
or we think Dr. Kissinger did a great job.
Yeah, not a few.
Did you hear anything?
As a matter of fact, one of them was asleep all through Henry's time.
Cotton, when he said.
Yeah.
But my point is that it seemed to me, naturally, you can tell them, but here they have, John, you can imagine what kind of a session that would have been with a Democratic leaders and a Democratic president. They would have been, gee,
why, sure.
Great.
How can we exploit this?
That's right.
You know,
all we do, as you say, they try to get a part of our problem here. Is one of the purposes of this is stay in the war in Vietnam. Frankly, it is one of the purposes, but they got to have Chinese.
Can't say. Yeah, can't say.
See, they'll deny it for the moment that you do it. And they may help us, but they got to help us quietly.
Sure.
Can't say it. But anyway, I suppose that when we say don't speculate, that puts a damper on it. But on the other hand, what I said at the last, they ought to be thinking I think that's very, very saleable merchandise.
Yep. I bet it is.
Huh?
Well, and one of them, you could have said, but one of them could have said, men, what we really have here is the whole thing of presidential leadership. This is the head of the ticket.
Sure.
And this is just gold in their pockets.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And somebody should have said that. Dole or somebody should have said that. But they didn't. And
I don't know why Dole doesn't step up and say it.
It's discouraging to see that bunch.
It really is. But then on the economy, I must say, of course, Dominic is a depressing
fellow. Yeah, negative. Everything is negative.
Everything he says is negative.
Yeah.
Even if he says something positive. But here's Dominic, Griffin, and all the rest of them.
Anderson.
Anderson, of course, saying, well, this and that and the other thing. Now, understand, I don't mean things are all that good, but goddamn, they aren't all that bad. They ought to be on there. But what is your feeling? I do when Chelsea gets in with her. I had a feeling myself that after listening to it, they should have come up there swinging.
Yep.
Why do I have to make the point I made it time and time and again that if you had maybe 300,000 off back in defense plants and in Vietnam, your unemployment rate would be 4.5?
Yep. You know, the thing that occurred to me, if a little guy like Pop, sitting in that meeting, would have spoken up and said, Mr. President, I can see how this thing's going now. He said, you're taking us out of this. He said, this is great news. There's a train running here. He could have, you know, he could have really colored that meeting. And for George or for me or for anybody else around the edge there to say something is, of course, self-serving for me.
Well, also, it's a very difficult for me to have to take the responsibility, particularly right now when it should be the other way, to have to charge up our own troops.
Yeah, they
should be charging me up a little.
They take and pay and pay.
I've been working, the last 3 months have been 10 months.
Sure.
We've been taking this meeting on this and that and the other thing, and fighting on the papers and the rest. Any of these goddamn people come in, why? I just thought it was a rather pitiful performance.
It was. Very disturbing.
I didn't think much of it.
George and I ran into each other in the men's room afterward, and we're talking about it.
George Peebles put it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just shabby. Really. Well.
Go ahead.
That's nearly all I have. I've been asked to do one of the lake talks at the Grove.
Great.
On the last weekend, and I don't know whether I should do it or not. I want to get your guidance on it.
Yeah, yes. Yes, do it. And in that talk, I think we've got to get a talking point on for people on the China thing out there.
Right.
And he's not very good at those talking points. Too technical, but you know, you just got to say a few little things like I say, well, here's 800 million people, and here's the danger, or so we make a deal with the Russians, what if we have another deal with them? Well, you know what I mean? It's that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's exciting.
Yeah, it really is. I think people around the country generally are excited about that. I mean, the average guy.
No, I think so.
And you get these clowns.
Well, I think some of these guys are. You want me to get Charles?
Yes, we're all set.
I think some of these guys must be.
Yes.
He's good citizens, but what the hell is the trouble in that?
Where's the guy with the smart shoulders?
Where the hell is the guy with the smart gun? I mean, I sat very much from there.
As if it were their due.
Yeah.
Well, I
you know, I just have a feeling that the meetings are not useful. What do you think? I mean, we talk about.
I don't know what the results are.
Which way?
results, what comes out of it, I wonder.
Do we get better results in terms of their defending you on the Hill or legislative support?
I have to say, I think McGregor ought to do a little more in this respect. McGregor, I thought he would. I'm sure he, McGregor's enthusiastic, but before a meeting like this, McGregor should have had somebody set to speak up.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you speak to McGregor?
I will.
Clark, you said at that meeting, you should have programmed somebody. You speak up. God damn it, you've got to do it. I guess that's what we have to do, John. Nobody's going to do it. Tell you what you do, then call me. Strong things about the economy that people can use for their speeches. take on 25 crabs, let's say, the Republican congressman, and you take 20 of them, he can take 25, you know what I mean? And let Connally have the, and do that within the next week or the next week or so. You talk to Connally about it. He can just invite down a group of people, and he gives them a good, says, look, I want to talk about the economy, and here's the talking about. Be sure the economy makes this war point. Always make the war point. You see, the way, remember that at the moment, peace is our issue, the economy is theirs. Next year, we'll go over ours. But there, it's to their interest to get us over the head about the economy. Our mistake would be to talk only about their issues. We must talk about ours anyway. They don't want to talk about the war. They don't want to talk about China. You're not going to see these Democrats talking about this. Particularly once the war is over.
On this general subject,
yeah. You would do that, set yourself free, and you
I'll talk to John.
Take John, we'd like to just handle the subject.
You want
spend an hour.
George and John to operate separately.
Yeah, that's right.
Separately.
Yeah. Right. Well, what I mean is, I want George to do the Republican senators.
Right.
You see, and then basically, that brings them to the White House.
Yep.
Now, Congressman can be brought to the Treasury Department. See?
Okay.
And so that John, you can't overwork him, because right now he's over. But George can take it. So the only way you're going to get through 150, and that's about as many as we'll come, or 160. 25, that's six groups, that's three. You take three to 25, and he takes three to 25. And haul them in, and just give it to him.
Okay.
I think it's a very good idea, and very possibly, and aggressively. Just to be like you did, that was a fine reservation smart for I don't take any scrap off of them. Part of their problem, George, is that they
don't do their homework.
They don't do their homework. Well, no, I said, how many of you do what we do?
Yeah.
How many of you do my citizens control? They all do it, but none of them know what they have thought about.
I don't think they even read the financial page.
No,
there's a whole lot of them writing it down when you make the search signs.
They're too busy meeting constituents.
Yeah.
But my point is that unless you really study this stuff and get it from our standpoint, you've also got to get to the majority more of the positive stuff like Stein's thing. It should be mailed around so that they all get it. And with a letter, I would urge that you read it. Jerry Porto will send that to everybody, all of his colleagues. Maybe you, Scott, says it to all of the Senate colleagues. But then it's just a question of getting them a different frame of mind. Because part of the problem here is basically, in terms of psychology, is basically talk. Now, let me say, I agree with you that when you take in Silver Sentence surveys and Harris polls or what have you, that they aren't really what matters. What matters is what people do, their decisions at the moment to it. Retail sales seem to indicate some confidence, right?
Correct.
Now, on the other hand, the psychology does affect politics. In other words, consumer sentiment does affect politics. And if people even buy a car that thinks things are going to hell, that is the problem. Now, the reason they think that is that they hear it from the Democratic spokesman who are back in their parents all the time. Very little defense on our part. I mean, the part of our congressmen and senators. They hear it on television and read it also in the press to an extent. Now, the answer to it, of course, is to have the numbers begin to look a little better. That isn't going to come for a while. I'm not particularly sanguine about all these things. But I'm not ready to run to the hills on them. This idea of 8% unemployment.
Professional
in that sense. But if it, maybe it may end up like a booger or something. That's true. It starts to will.
I don't think it will.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
It would really be a statistical inversion.
Let me say it. The main thing is that if your number starts to just receive it, and I don't expect this, if it could start in October to go down, in other words, get the 5.6 out of the way and let it go back down to whatever it's supposed to be, but then have it go 1/10 of a point at a time, that's all. No more. It's all that's needed. Jiggle up and down just a little. Look back to the Kennedy years, 61, 2, and 3. God damn it, the average is 5.7 in those years. The average. 6.7, 61, you know, when they hit the trough. 5.3, 5.7. Good God. But why then do people think times were good? Because it was getting a little better. Correct?
Well, it's getting better now. And, Griffin, of course, talked about it in terms of forecasts. I think the point I tried to get across to him was most of what I had to say in there was a report on what had happened in the first half. It wasn't a forecast. It was a report. Factual.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good point.
We're not blowing smoke up their ass or any of that sort. You were just telling them what had happened, and then they said, all right, that's what's going to happen in the future. Well, based on what's happened in the past, we think we can, it may look pretty good in the future. Right? But I don't know. Let me put it this way. I can assure you, all that matters is what happens. All that matters is what happens. It makes a difference. We can all, everybody can forecast, they can talk it down, they can talk it up, but it's what happens. And if things happen well, all these aren't going to mean anything. But on the other hand, I do think some hand-holding sessions with these dumb crooks before they go out in August, the other thing that you want to remember, George, is that most of these guys are talking to Republican audiences. Most Republican audiences are business-oriented, and most businessmen are vicious. So, see my point? So, see, that reflects, again, the kind of jerks that Flanagan gets in here and talks to, you know. Well, there are a few businessmen that are that way, but that's a few standard people. Bunch of private concerns.
Oh, they are. And it's interesting how that profits will make a difference. And you talk to retailers, they're just ecstatic. They can hardly what is going on. And many of the production people haven't quite felt it yet, but they're beginning to.
Well, on the retail side, too, George, they talked to, he was talking, for example, Anderson Reeves, great news. Doing to the sun, giving that figure about the sales of the consumers. And see, this is a terrible thing. He's just dead wrong. In terms of the past, it's terrible. In terms of the future, it's great. Correct? In other words, it means there's a hell of a lot of money ready to be spent. Correct?
Well,
I'd hell of a lot rather have that money ready to be spent than to have it already spent. Like on inventory, see. You can say, gee whiz, the fact that businessmen have very low inventories indicates lack of confidence, correct? On the other hand, in terms of the future, if retail sales are down, it's something to be very, very bullish about, correct?
Well, that's right. Once it turns, it gives the economy a terrific wow. That inventory building has been a traditional big swinger on an upturn.
Is that right?
We haven't gotten any benefits from that yet. Even the steel buildup, I think, came to a fair extent from foreign imports. That didn't give us quite the lift in the steel mills we might have gotten, although they've been going pretty well until now. And,
we have a bunch of money for public service jobs coming up. And the appropriation has not passed yet. But we're trying to get in shape to
spend it.
Right.
That's right.
And
spend it. I guess possibly our problem is we don't do things in the way. That's right.
We had a one-day turnaround on that. In terms of you signed that bill, and the next day you sent the appropriation request. There was no delay. You sent the bill.
The money will be ready. The plan will be ready, it looks like, right after Labor Day, if we get the appropriation in the meantime.
No, not till then.
Not till then.
Good God.
And,
why does it take that long?
Well, that seems to be part of the...
Well, when is it?
Part of the operation.
Be passed?
Well, I would guess we get the appropriation within a month.
Then, well, no, you get it within a week.
No, I'm not so sure whether we get it before the recess or not.
Badgering?
Well, we are badgering them. Clark is badgering them.
Badgering? Well, I'm not saying badgering, but it's a public badgering on this. I think some public badgering on that is very important. Then if you get the money, let's suppose you got it before the recess, before July 31st, the appropriation, why don't you start spending it right then? Why the hell can't you? Why does it take another month to start getting money?
Well, I hate to tell you why things can't be done.
No, I would think you could, because I would think you would be planning it now.
They are planning it now.
But I just can't get it done.
Well, let me give you an example. One of the things that has to be done is that a formula for distribution has to be set. And there's about four or five different ways that this thing can go. We're working on this in San Clemente, and George's fellows here, on the right formula to use to get the money into the 10 critical states. And there are 10 states. You can do it on a lot of different bases. Present number of unemployed people, or change in unemployment since 1969, or there are a lot of different formulas that can be used. So we got this set up on a computer now, and they're running the variations. And the first readout that I got on it didn't get us enough impact in Texas and Illinois and California and some of the places we really wanted it. So it's back to the drawing board. That's going to take some time. We don't have a distribution formula yet, so we're not in any shape to spend the money. Then the problem is in appointing a dispersing agent. Should it be the states? Should it be the cities over 100,000? What should we use as our dispersing mechanism? And so that's got to be, once decided, it's then got to be arranged for. And then regulations have to be printed. That's what we're working on.
I'd rather not worry too much about the formula. I don't really think, you know, I said put a hell of a lot in the job formula, do the best you can. But I don't think it makes a lot of difference.
Because I think it will. It'll make some real difference in the percentage number.
Will it?
Yeah, I think so.
In California. 15,000 jobs. Okay.
It's a peripheral kind of thing too. If you put a guy back to work, if you get some ripples. The other thing that we've got going in this general area is a Salafoy.
Yes, I am.
And he's about ready to report.
Yeah.
When he does, I think it'd be a good idea to give him a little time.
Of course.
And we've had some pretty good reaction from his being out and around.
Good.
I don't know whether his report will be any good, but it's just the fact that he's being out there is going to be good in terms of people.
Are you using him for something else?
No, we're going to use him for this. We're going to keep him traveling around, showing presidential concern about California and the coast, and then trying to flag it.
I think that Reagan thinks this too, that things are better in California than people make out too. I really, I think it's frankly just the psychology of the name talk and everything. They're, because of aerospace and the rest, sure, unemployment is up, but there's just a hell of a lot of things. You've got to remember California, 40 million people are working. It's just a hell of a lot of people.
It was distressing and amusing, sort of the outrage with which the drop in the unemployment rate was greeted. It was as though you're not allowed to have that happen.
I feel like you said, this administration is not allowed to be allowed to have any good news. That's why the China thing is not really bad.
Yeah.
I've never seen them so discombobulated. Don't know what to do.
Unavoidable.
Don't know what to do.
Did you visit with Connolly at all about tax reform yesterday?
No.
All right, no comment at all. The reason I ask you is that we're going to make a presentation.
He told me that Mills had a tax bill and wanted to see me and him about his tax thing. And I said, oh, sure, I'll talk to him. Just to hear Mills' proposal.
Well, listen,
he still feels that he still
getting at is the...
We didn't discuss any... No, here's what we were discussing was basically the tax. Bills was not indicated he's going to have a tax bill.
Yeah.
Remember, I always assumed Bills would not let a tax bill come up this Congress. I doubt he can get one. I think he got one. And frankly, if he does, so he gets it. Right?
But see, Bill talks glibly about cutting spending. That's not easy to do.
He wouldn't dare. He knows there's no way you're going to cut spending.
Well, what he's doing is he's coming up with various devices to soak up revenue sharing money. And that's one of the gimmicks here. Tax credits or tax relief or tax reduction and so on. Now, the reason I ask the question is that we have a number of tax reform proposals like value added and other tax simplification and deductions and so on. And they were sent to Connolly and he came back and said he had no comment, which I thought was kind of odd. And I thought perhaps he had made some comments to you about it. All right, well, we'll pick it up at the end of the week.
He probably isn't ready to do it. Now, Mills is taking revenue sharing and basically saying instead of 5 billion for revenue sharing, let's put 5 billion in tax reduction. Okay, why not? What's the answer to that?
Well, the answer to that is that leaves the money in the pocket of the taxpayer, and he's going to go and put it into the bank. For one thing, it's not stimulating. Revenue sharing, it gets translated into all kinds of capital construction and puts money into circulation. That'd be the superficial argument. Now, I don't know how the economists would look at it.
Connolly is just furious at the Fed. He says
Arthur's asking for an appointment with you.
No.
That's what I told him.
Straight down.
I told Chicken that I didn't think he wanted to see him.
I'll see. Yes, sir. I'm going to see him. He's going to wait and see me when we have a quadrant meeting. Do you agree?
I agree. I'm going to see him. He's called and asked me to come over. So I'm going to come over and see what he had in mind. Well, I thought it'd be better to have him, for me to go over there than have him come to the White House.
All right, fine. Well, we've got to clearly understand here that Arthur's he's chosen his bed now for a while. And if he wants to be independent, I respect his independence. Now, it's just going to be that way. And his guests could prove wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And Arthur, he may be, he's crafty enough to know. George, as you know, we said before, he's extremely volatile in his own up and down. Arthur's either way up or way down. Traditions. But Arthur may be smart enough as he looks at these things. He must have some smart people around him. He does that, of course. I think that maybe, just maybe, his predictions could prove to be wrong. What do you think?
Well, I think that...
I mean, on the recovery, not on the inflation, on the recovery.
His prediction on the recovery, as you say, he's predicted everything there is. I think most recently now he's saying that it's a good recovery.
Has he said that?
A couple of months or so ago he was saying that there was no confidence and so on and so on.
But is he saying a good recovery? I noticed the Fed's last things. Even the Fed had something on industrial production. I don't know what. They had a couple of figures that were a little better than mine.
Well, they put out the industrial production figure and it surprised us that it was as good as it was because the employment report, you remember, showed a slight decline in seasonally adjusted employment. There was an increase in hours, so that sort of offset, but usually that's a tip-off on industrial production, but there are other information that carried it up.
Now, on Arthur, just the care and feeding of Arthur Burns, I didn't talk to Connolly about this. I'm sure he has the same view, that we certainly would be prepared to see whether but I just think at this time, George, in view of his conduct, that I'm not going to come here and have him lecture me about something.
He can't take a decision that's made and then go on from there. He's got to keep worrying it until he gets his way.
That's the way we spent our first year around here.
Yeah. So the decision is made, and I'm delighted. I've got his views, but
He's been up there for a while. His neighbor is Milton Friedman. Milton told me that he has a hard time talking about economics with Arthur because they are challenged now. But at the same time, Milton is a pretty effective fellow.
Maybe Milton got
to him. He may have gotten to him a little bit, and I'll try to find out. But
that's right. You test the water with him. And let me say, a few people that I've seen, but I think I ought to see Arthur with people.
Sure.
I'm just not going to see him alone again. I just feel that he's got to let us down.
Don't you feel that way? I think he has. I just hope he keeps that money supply going, though. Not at the rate that it was, but the problem there has been to go from one extreme to the other. That's the problem.
There's one thing that if Arthur raises that I think you should know. I understand there may be a change in the board is one man.
Well, there's one fellow that has a rumor around he's going to resign.
I understand that. And Arthur may be coming in to tell me who's going to be appointed. If it's ready, just say I already have somebody in mind. I already accomplished the position or something else. How about you tell him that?
Okay.
Just say that. He wouldn't tell me who it was, but the president has already promised it to somebody else. The way you should consult me, hell no. You didn't consult me. Are you ready to read this down, right? I didn't consult the board before I appointed him. I already got somebody in mind. I'll tell you what I've done. I've told Conley to find the easiest money man he can find in the country. And one that knew exactly what Conley wants, and one that will speak up to Burns. And Conley is searching the goddamn hills of Texas, California, Iowa. We'll get a populist senator on that board one way or another. But that's what we have. If you know somebody that's crazy, let me know too. John's on the way. I said, John, I want a man on that board that I control. I really do. And basically, the Conley will control. And Conley's looking hard. But Arthur's not going to name that man to the board, George. It's just not going to be done.
Sorry. I've got a whole string of things, but
right.
Go ahead. I'll go through with you if I can. IWA called this morning, Steelworkers President.
You want to hear these things, or you want to talk, John?
Yes, I would like to have
it. Yeah, whatever you want. He's just John.
He's sending you a letter because he wanted to tell me about it. Make sure you get it.
Fine.
Urging that the Granite City Steel National Steel merger be approved. He thinks it's good for jobs and so on. So I'll be sure that you get the letter. We'll have the acknowledgement. But I think that's an interesting angle of view on this antitrust business, and no doubt he's willing to say publicly what he'll say in the letter if we wanted to.
We do.
So I think that.
Well, now what do we have to do to get this merger approved? Who's to fire that Paul McGuire? Is that the problem? Are they holding it up?
I'm not sure he's holding it up.
No, there's any particular problem. But
I want there to be a problem. So it appears that we're doing it at his request. And this is one where I want you to find out, John, through the subterranean channels, is there a problem? Trouble? Let them raise questions about it. And then I want Abel to know, and you can let him know for me, that the president checked the matter. We found that there is a problem. He personally has said that he feels very much in the interest because of the interest expressed by Mr. Abel, as well as the management people, naturally the management people are asking for the merger. But it's reviewed that Mr. Abel's expressed interest. He believes in himself the interest to be given. Just right around you. But incidentally, there is to be no opposition to this. McGuire doesn't want to do it. The hell with it. It's a matter of judgment. I know the antitrust laws too, and my judgment is without knowing anything about this case, the merger should be approved. Okay?
Abel also reports that the copper thing.
Abel.
Oh, yeah, Abel. He reports the copper thing is, he thinks, pretty well along. By the end of the week, he thinks they'll have some more companies settled. Basically, on strike will be out on the way. He reports that and I'm interested that he felt that he wanted to let you know what's going on in the steel market.
Yeah.
That's going well. They've done a good job of cleaning up local issues. They haven't gotten to the money yet, but they're getting along address yourself to these costs. I think if we should come, so we'll do that. And I said, our door is open here. If you want to come over, if you and Larry want to come over and talk about it, we'll see it. So there's that communication that's going on. Hi Romney's called you last week. You know who he is, the chairman of AT&T, to tell you that, and I returned a call on your behalf. His message was that, don't worry, they'll have phone service. So, they've completed their settlement now, and it might be a good trick for you to call Hi Romney's and thank him for the call. So he's an influential fellow in the business community.
Pretty good fellow.
Yeah, pretty good guy. And his message was really one of reassurance. And the big thing that the union was pounding on them for, to eliminate regional differentials in wages, they didn't give in on. And I'm sure they didn't give in on it. It would have been a tragedy for them.
My God, you can't give people in Mississippi the same amount that you give in New York. So it costs one third as much as it did. I didn't.
Extraordinarily good job in that phone bargaining, both the union and the company. Bert made a public statement about, I noticed, the union president. So Kurt, with that, he's been doing a good job in the company.
He seems to have an ability to do that.
He's just good at it.
Kurt is not an election job, but she's the first to suck up. But he's got a great patience.
Yes, I don't see how he does, but he does.
He's sizzling all night long.
Now, another fellow who's been performing, and I mention this because this lighter thing has been very explosive for a couple of weeks, is Ussery.
Ussery.
Red Blunt will tell you they could, this postal settlement is pretty good, and Red would say they couldn't possibly have done it without Ussery. He shuttled back and forth between the railroads and the postal. He's been very creative in the railroads. They have on the table now a breakthrough on work rules. I just hope that they don't get all hung up on side issues and settle. But anyway, Ussery is in that.
I'll let him know.
I don't know how he stays up as much as he does.
Well,
he's
very
good.
You know, the other thing that she should mention, that I was too quick making your group presentation, George, is to make the point that you made in Plymouth today, but these folks have slipped by, that next year is going to be a much better year in terms of wage settlements than this year. And you already pointed out the ballooning, of course, it means that the effect, but also there just aren't going to be as many big, it's not very true, 72 is going to be a relatively quiet year in terms of labor conflict.
I think that's true. This postal thing is a 2-year wage agreement. Once we get these railroads locked up, and there are a couple more things to go beyond the present one, they'll be locked up for about.
Let me tell you one thing that I feel about Spiegel, and I know you didn't want to go this far in meeting but I feel very strongly that there cannot be a strike here. We just don't want any damn strike to affect this economy at the moment. So they're going to pay the price anyway. What's your feeling? Are they going to avoid it or come to
it? I think there's a good chance they'll avoid it, and I think your meeting with them helped in that regard.
Well, I hope it didn't help to the extent that the steel people, the employers, figured that we took a weapon away from that. But yeah, they don't want to strike too late.
Jim Hudson thinks the big company is I think maybe he's being overly suspicious of it there.
The little companies certainly don't want it.
They can't. And the big companies know that if they force little companies into a long strike, it looks like bankruptcy for them or something, they'll settle. And so probably at higher rates than otherwise.
You'll have a strike.
The West Coast Longshore, I think, that's shaping up to be quite a difficult thing. And John's probably told you about some of
it. I just remember about that. I don't think that affects us so much, though, the nation. I just let them screw around.
On our labor business, now I'm switching to the Productivity Commission. We have been looking towards some sort of a conference in September, and we've check some dates on your calendar. And I was on the verge of calling me to get his participation and so on. And then the AFL-CIO got off this conference and he took out pretty hard after John. And I don't think John liked it very much. He didn't say anything that he hadn't said before. He's always been critical on the economy. And he was explicit in giving you credit on foreign affairs. I haven't called him because I just wanted to check back with you once more on whether we want to continue to do that and to try to get this as a labor management type conference, talking about productivity. And I think a lot of your ideas about interest in the future, that kind of thing, can be put right in here. But I just wanted to check back with you again before doing that. We could have a conference of that kind and so on without the labor people, but ours would be different.
Well, isn't this part of a larger question, really, of what our tactics ought to be with regard to labor, and particularly Meany, who's taking us on very hard in a partisan way. He got in bed with Carl Albert and the Democrats on this whole unemployment thing. And that was sort of the ideological keynote to this Democratic attack that we've been undergoing.
You know, I'm just thinking, among many other things, it wasn't intended that way, that this China thing, that was that attack was launched with the idea of just keeping it going for about 3 weeks or so. And they got after 2 days, you planted it.
Sure.
You planted it in Vietnam.
Sure.
It'll come back. But we at least brought ourselves a little time there.
That's right. That's right.
You notice how little they can get in there economically.
That was the day that Senator Harris announced he was running for president, too. And one of the news magazines said he chose...
Harris running?
Oh, yeah. Declared.
He's given up on re-election.
Yeah. Declared out of Oklahoma.
Declared out?
Yeah.
Because he can't get the nomination?
Yeah. Thinks Edmondson will get the nomination, apparently. But I don't know if there's time, or one of them said that the senator unerringly picked the worst day of the year to make his announcement.
So he says, apparently this is the week Lindsay's supposed to, did you know?
Well, he's had so many. I mean, there have been so many.
I think this...
Think this is it?
Yeah, this was from the timeline people. We got it correctly. Lindsay was going to announce his shift to the Democratic Party this week. Now he's delayed it. Well, he may or may still go, but...
They're
going through some nationalizing reappraisal of that. That's the timing on that.
Yeah. We'd had a couple of other predictions that didn't
come
out.
This one came from, let me say, an unimpeachable source.
All right.
I won't tell you who it is. I imagine, you'll squall around a little bit. Well, on the other one, I think what we ought to do is to sit down and talk a little about that in terms of the politics. Let's have you and George and I get John Conley in. And I think in this instance, let's get Colson in. Colson, of course, is the advocate to get along with the labor people. On one side, Conley, I would assume, might not. My own view is that such conferences are useful. I don't think we do any harm, let's put it that way. The alternative is just to ignore Meany, declare war on him or something like that. I don't know as that gains too much. I mean, I don't know what you get, except that unless taking him on, and that means taking all the labor on, the wage increases and so forth, means that you have a lot of public support for it. Maybe you do. There are many that, that the polls show that they're very, very strong. And labor union demand is not terribly strong. The unions are in pretty bad public posture. They're pretty good enemies to have. From a political standpoint, however, we have certainly the Teamsters and probably the
We just don't have a very clear signal right now.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be awfully good to sit down and talk it through and get some feel for how you want to go on.
How soon do you have to decide?
Well, Meany is going to leave for the West Coast. A series of things, I believe, at the end of this week.
We should meet.
So if we could do this,
sure.
This week?
Tomorrow or sometime very soon.
Fine. All right. See what you get tomorrow. See if we can have a little conflict about this.
We can get that put up.
Might be worth listening to Bill Usher on this subject. I'll talk to him. So I'll
write it to the people. You get Usher's and we get the Colson's. I think it would be well also if Conley has come into a cold this time and maybe talk to him a little in advance. Might be that the group could talk a little about it, then I'll come in.
All right.
You see what I mean? Because he's probably got feelings. I see no reason to have anybody else. I wouldn't get, I mean, at least in Hodgson's stance, because they have to represent certain constituencies, but we all Conley should be on them for reasons we all know. Because he will think politically. That's somebody. It's a political decision, that's all.
Skipping on to...
I asked Conley, too. It's an interesting question. He might have to just get his view for it. Do you like being asked? Take labor and tea, or should we try to get along?
Of course, he wants to get along, but that's his stock and trade. Acceptability.
But I mean,
he may have some thoughts on that. Have some ideas of how people talk to him about on the side. Within the OMB, we have a personnel shift impending. Arnold Weber is going back to the University of Chicago. Probably Bob told you that. So we probably announced that on Wednesday. He won't be going back until the end of August, but word's kind of getting around, so we made an announcement on that. We've explored around about who might be a replacement. I might just say, whoever leaves with great affection and respect for you, and he's 100% for the administration and so on, so it's a good, strong feeling there. Talk about possible replacements. It's a hard job, and it requires somebody who knows something about government, as well as some touch in a managerial sense. John and I have talked about it. So. And the person that we thought would be good, I think would be good, John does, and Kat is enthusiastic about, and who would be glad to do it, would welcome the chance to do it, is Frank Carlucci, the head of OEO.
Oh.
We think he's a very good man.
What the hell do you do with OEO, Bosch?
How would you downplay it?
I'd love to.
Get a good, gray administrator in there.
Well, Kirk, I just think we've got to be sure that it's got a hand.
This is a higher calling. This is about the size of it.
Does he feel it? Has he got somebody? Has he got some good gray guy that he can put in that position?
Yeah, I think he has a couple that might be pretty good there. This fellow named Wilson that I think could do.
He just wants somebody we can control.
Yarnley? Yeah.
Well, maybe he can oversee a bit before he does.
Well, from that posture in OMB, you have a lot of dealings with OEO.
He could take this and then just sort of ride her on the damn thing, because that OEO is the first thing we're going to flush, and we have an opportunity to do it. Literally. I think that's a fine
question. I would personally like to announce Carlucci at the same time as Weber.
Yeah.
Stop speculation about who's going to be in that job. Of course, it leaves speculation about who's going to do the OEO job. Maybe that's worse. I don't know.
No, I just announce all three. I work out the whole ploy.
One one thing we might do, is if you can't get the OEO thing settled, is just say it'll operate under the deputy director for the time being, which would tend to downgrade it all by itself. Just settle along with the deputy director.
The deputy director will be the action director later on, just making the arrangement.
So, Carlos, you wouldn't have to actually take office, so to speak, in the OMB until September or so, so he can keep the town problem. He's got a variety of things going on the hill right now that you would be content to.
He's getting badgered on his CRLA settlement. Cranston.
Sure.
Oh, you did it right
on on the statistics situation. I've sent out a statement to the Secretaries of Commerce, Agriculture, and Labor, which have the big statistical agencies, under which they reorganize themselves so that when the bringing together of the statistical agencies and proposing their reorganization plan comes about, they are internally organized so that it's easy for them to put themselves together. Essentially, what this involves is dividing the statistics gathering function as the big operating function from analysis of statistics. Now, I think that's a perfectly logical thing to do. It was more or less underway. And that will also be an occasion when Goldstein's duties can be shifted without any great strains. And he would be moved into something else, probably a statistician as such type job. And anyway, he would be gotten out of the employment statistics analysis business. Just be removed from that area. And we'd expect to have that part of it accomplished in the BLS by September, is your date. And we'll also have in the BLS shorter announcements. They'll just lay the statistics on the table, so to speak, with a brief statement about
what the BLS will do. They call us as things of trying to interpret it, and we just ought to probably try as much more.
Well, we can do the interpretation as Jim Hobson or somebody can give his view, and all the Democrats will give their view. But anyway, the BLS can just put the statistics there, and we'll sort of make them shorter. Well, the words that they have to say will be less.
What is the problem on Goldstein in terms of the Versailles project? I'm glad to see him there, but what is the problem with the move? Did you say that this plan was already underway?
Basically, that's right. And I think we can take that position. I think one thing we have to be very careful about, is that we don't get labeled as fixing the numbers.
Particularly at the time the numbers may be getting a bit better.
But I think we can bring this off all right. Jimmy Shiskin, the OMB statistician, is going to write a little something for the statistics community. And he thinks this is a good idea, independent of Goldstein. We'll probably move into that appointment area. A woman who's been in OMB for a long time, that I've known for years, like Margaret Martin, very able gal. And she will transfer her over to the BLS, and she can take charge of this area. And she's competent. She's not as flamboyant as Goldstein or any of those people. She's not looking for all the publicity. I think she'll handle it pretty well. I'm persuaded she would believe me to let go of her. He wants to keep her there if she's good. But I think that's something that can work out, so we have that going. You went over the memorandum that I sent you on these executive pay schedules. Followed the discussion you and I and John had.
Yeah.
And you checked some things and put no by some things and put some question marks down by some other things. The question mark was, maybe I can just explain a little bit more what's involved.
me, the business of creating a deputy director for the management side, as well as a deputy director for the budget side, which we have now, yeah. By way of implementing the Ash Council recommendation and giving this business of management and so on, visibility and raising the status of it, we sort of created that job out of whole cloth by taking a loose level 4 and assigning it to OMB and just putting a title on. And this would be making it more official. And at the same time, putting Cap's job and this management job at the level of level 2, which is the deputy secretary level. That's what we were seeking to do there.
And then they always raise their own
others. But I think right now the sensitivity on inflation shouldn't be so great.
Well, we can pass it, the whole thing for now, and wait until next year. And then it's sort of more obviously, really can't be tied. It takes a longer path. It can't be tied in.
When does the capital review take place again on executive salaries?
Well, that kind of thing is
68
a year.
68
will have 72 recommendations to make prior to the next Congress coming. That could also be an occasion for getting this whole thing.
It's very wonderful.
They think we have a problem that's illustrated by the Carlucci case. He's a level two. He will take this job as a level four. He's a long-time government employee, and God, that hurts. But he says it's a better job, and I'm excited about doing it for him.
Well, if there is any question about getting it, I'll do it one minute. Later point. I just don't want to get into the issue right now. And particularly right now, I think we could, John, I think we might be able to hurt if we get capital to recommend it.
Well, we have to appoint a commission. It won't be Fred. It'll be somebody else, I guess, this time. But every 4 years, there's supposed to be this review of executive salaries. And what's happened, apparently, is that the Capital Commission was pretty modest in their increase. Or Johnson cut back, I guess. He didn't feel the traffic could bear it. As a result, some of the hierarchy around the government has gotten ahead of the your people in terms of what's being paid over here. So review would be timely across the board. And if you could tuck it in under that, I think we'd get away with it. Because you make the case. I don't know whether we're allowed to do that or not. I think it's under statute that it's every 4 years.
Well, why don't we check to see if we could get
away? I'll find out.
After all, it's every 4 years you can appoint the commission before the time arrives so that they can make their study and get an earlier point.
I think we could do it in terms of timing at the same time. This implements the Ash Council recommendations.
Right.
I don't know that the Capital Commission type thing would recommend on these levels, but that it could be put in at the same time.
I'm for it, and you can certainly give the assurances that the Carlucci Press will be done, considering it has to be done. Does Burns know that this is a matter of consideration?
Oh, it's an amusing thing. He's never talked to me about it, but he talks to Cap about once every week, asking that this be done. He wanted the whole Federal Reserve Board raised to level two, and we told him no.
I'll tell you what you do. I think it's a good way to handle it all. Just say that you see, just say the president, because of the inflation problem with which he is so deeply concerned about, the government should set an example. Can you do that, please?
We have some other things here as well.
But I think I know that in there it's terribly important with that Treasury thing that you've got to give comment.
Well, yeah, we were going to raise the undersecretary to level two to be deputy secretary, create a new undersecretary.
I don't think that raises the same problem. Do you?
No.
I don't think it poses the same problem. That's so obvious with the reorganization. And also, I'd like to do that in our hero where we're looking, just as well to see him. What the hell is this going to mean? And I can see what the point is. We're telling George and the rest of you, if we do it, it doesn't affect them at this point. That's not right. So it affects our rights. I don't think it'll be done. I mean, after all, we're just terribly going to fight this inflation.
That jogged my recollection on something. We have hanging over the question of 25 more slots for customs that John Connolly requested. And Krogh has some recommendations for you on that as a result of his trip around the world, because the thought was these slots be used overseas. So at some point in time,
that we're on track with Connolly here. We don't go around.
No. around him. But the problem here is he made a request direct to you, which went around Mitchell, which is what escalated the whole thing into our office, because Mitchell objected to that. So, well, I don't think you do. Kirk makes a very good case for not granting this. And I think what you have to do is look at the whole picture of our overseas narcotics operation and decide where we can best put this money in this effort. And so at some point, you may want to visit with Krogh a little bit about this to get a feel for it, because I know Connolly will be coming to you and coming to you on it, because he's getting gigged by Rosides all the time. And they're doing a little empire building there. And so I'd just like to flag that and then postpone consideration of it until you can hear from Krogh on what the overall picture is. I think you have to get into it, because Connolly will get you into it in the future. Otherwise, it's something we can handle.
On this list, we'll go ahead with the non-OMB Fed things. There's one other in the executive office that we put a question mark by, and that is an additional position of deputy director for the Office of Science and Technology, Ed Davis thing. He has one deputy, and he wants two. It's a level four job. And this is because he wants to get a broader spread of sort of scientific representation. He wants the biological science type as well as his physical science type there. And I'm going to put a question mark beside that. Well, if we
wonder about that office, should we use the TV office, the whole office?
With your push, we've been examining, Jonathan's been working on this, and I have this whole business of research and development, what we're doing in it, what we should be doing, and how it's organized, and so on. And I think one of the real questions there is, what is the right role for the Office of Science and Technology? Should they be sort of playing a stronger coordinating role, or what? I think one of the emerging things, affecting your interest, what Peterson's been talking about, the interest in the Productivity Commission and so on, is a growing interest in more effective research and development, particularly what can be done to help make American products more competitive and so on. So this area will relate to it, and this has to be a part of it. We can do it this way. We probably can also, in this, we ask for 15 additional level 4 and 5 slots that are in a pool which you can assign. And one of the things we have said was we'd assign one to treasurer, for example. We get another way of doing this would be just to say we'll assign one to the Office of Science and Technology and let it fill this job without labeling it as a specific request in here. Do it that way, if you like.
I would think that over the years, one way or the other, it's best for you to keep it in general, in order, in a pool.
Well, having a pool gives you flexibility, and if something doesn't work out, you withdraw that and decide it somewhere else.
Also, you might want to put it there, right? Find another office that needs it more. Take it out of there. You're a long guy who abolished the job.
Okay.
Should they slow down?
Yeah, I don't really know the merits of this OST request. I do think we're getting more and more tentative about whether we're really structured right for this R&D attack. I mean, I guess the other way to say it is we're getting less and less convinced that we're structured right, that we're going to have to change to do a better job.
Yeah, you got a chance to work through that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very, very good.
Switching to another topic, I am scheduled to give a talk to the Urban League on Monday. following your discussion with Mr.
Yeah.
Hewitt and with the young business and so on. And I thought I would just adapt this steady as you go business, philosophically, so to speak, to the civil rights area.
Maybe you could add a few other
themes. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be helpful. I know that I should make a comment about the great leadership of the Urban League, and that'll, of course, be taken as a slam dunk. How you can go there. And I'll say something that you're going to win the young.
I said to Bob Brown, I told God in the song, I said, you know, that was one of those things that I said, if you ever ask me an opinion, I know a lot of black African leaders, and I say that I go through, I've always been impressed by their leaders, and black Americans can be very proud of their African heritage. Right, John?
Yeah,
I'm proud of something.
Among other things.
I couldn't understand it. Could you?
No. I really.
What the hell do you say it for?
I don't.
And why do you want to build up, for example? I know this whole route too long. People are there only 50 years old. They have trees.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Mabuse.
And also, they're competing with blacks.
Mabuse. The sad part of it is that the Wilderness had just come out to the NAACP and said, look, we're going to have to live with this fellow until 76, so we better start learning to get along with it. And then
on a lot of the things like this Black Caucus response and so on, where people say that, you know, it's so bad after all, we're getting something accomplished. Well, we can. That's the theme that I thought I'd try to share with the president, if that's all right.
How did everybody react to
Yeah, they all blasted him. The press exploited it quite a bit. And some of the blacks were pretty smart about it. They were more in sorrow than anger. Isn't it too bad that the president has this albatross around his neck? That kind of a line, which I think probably in the long haul is more effective than if they had been striking about it.
Probably a lot of Europeans.
Mabuse kind of carried away with all that and thought, you know, here's
where the space
on the airplane. On the airplane going to space.
Back to our space. There is where he gets in trouble. It's every time that he relaxes a bit with the press and Marriott at midnight press conference and he and his press secretary, and then he starts popping on the phone and then he gets in trouble. You know what I think happens is he drops his guard.
Mm-hmm.
When he's on a program, he's very up, you know.
Yeah.
And so on. But I've never, of course, been in office. I never meet the press in a relaxed manner. Never. I'm never going to. You can't run the danger in this position. Ever letting your hair down. You know, just pop him off about something, say what he thought. And I think that's why he thought he was a problem. He said, I thought that's what he honestly believed.
I think that's the case.
He would never have said such a damn thing. But what do you think, John, that just, if you look back over the problem that he's had for your workings, and he's publicly, he's done extremely well. Very good at speak, very articulate. But privately, he's making his damn boo-boos.
Yeah.
Is this correct?
Yeah, this is kind of like the fat Jap crack that he made on the airplane, you know, and he gets him off. They get carved and stuff once that gets out. That's it. And if they've been when he's off guard.
Other bad gentlemen, but a press man.
Yeah.
A friend of his, actually.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they used it against him. I don't know, George, how you think. Well, they won't hold you responsible for the damn thing.
Yeah, we've got a real bridge to the Urban Lake. We're embedded in that.
Oh, you embedded here.
Very impressive. Oh, yeah. He'll have to advance. I understand that. He's to keep his own constituency down there. From the other hand, he's a very able fellow. He's a quick mind. He moved with very great precision. He could be a great leader.
I had a nice letter from him afterward. Because you went upstairs and I had McLean come over and brief him on reference sharing. And when he got back, he wrote a very smooth, adroit letter.
Where does reference sharing stand? The president come over to say anything?
No, he can't find the plug. He's having a hell of a time. And they're backing and filling up there. And finally, our inside man in the executive sessions reports that John Burns slapped his forehead in the middle of one of their sessions and said, we're in a political trap. We got to find our way out of this. But they're really floundering.
They're not taking Wilbur's plan.
He hasn't got a plan.
He hasn't got it.
That was just
it's all smoke.
And he'll be a city plan of smoke.
Yeah. And he's catching Mary Hell. I call Rockefeller, and he had arranged to come down and get Mills in his airplane, take him up to New York, have a day with him, and demonstrate to him the plight of the states. And Mills is just catching it from every side. He's been buffeted. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him finally run the white flag up and come up with something that is identifiably yours. On general revenue sharing. Now, special is in various states of plus and minus. We'll get some and we have no chance on others. But the fact that special revenue sharing is there tactically protects a flank. Otherwise, they'd be clear around you that way on need and all that sort of stuff. The combination of the two has made such a solid front that they just can't avoid finally coming to your proposal. And I think given if this thing keeps going the way it has been in the executive session, they're going to end up in your lap.
Don't worry about the vice president thing. Don't get in a position where it is handled directly so they can say, but you just say what you feel, you know what I mean? You've got to when it's honest. You've got to be honest. You could say you were talking to the president about this. He was so that he he was so, he had remarked about how he had known Whitney Young since spring, you know, impressed by been through their offices and the people, their dedication. He had met the new president, an appointment that was, you know, just for what was supposed to be a formal, formal appointment. It went on for twice the amount of time. He kept somebody waiting for a half hour, which is really true, and because he was so impressed by it. I think a little of that stuff goes a long way with it. And we want to work with them. And this is a responsible leaders. Just say that he's impressed by the responsible leadership that the Urban League has given.
What about a letter from you that I took and read?
Oh, yeah, let's just write it. I don't need to see it. Just have a nice letter written. Have Ray Price write it. Or write it very. Or Ray or Lynn Garment, you know. I mean, anybody who. The letter writer, or Ray can do it. Write it, you take it. Blow it up a little.
Okay.
Sure.
Brother,
we've got to really get at him, though. God damn it, he just can't. What do you think, John?
Well, I've been talking to Bob a little about this.
He is in place.
I think we do have to do something. And,
you know, for example, big, strong, vigorous guy who over here would be pushing him off. Really, that's right. I mean, he's smart.
Tough.
He might be a sergeant or something like that, and an able guy in that way, but I mean, no rich. So he talks about Mobutu, and they talk about the red Chinese thing and so forth, and Mobutu expressed support of it, and he said, well, he had some doubts about it. Well, now, first of all, if he had doubts, he should never express it to a foreign government. Second, he shouldn't express it to Mobutu. Because, you know, Mobutu is a child up here because he's never had a chance to grow up up here. He'd be all right in the end. God, that's just unbelievable to me, the guy that Henry was going to just go away. And fortunately, it was only in the reporting cable and Mobutu hadn't put it out yet. It's just the fact that it's this compulsion on the part. It isn't just anger. Some of our others, you know, let's face it, John.
Yep.
You know, have a compulsion to be honest.
Doctrinaire.
And also to be, not only, I don't want people to be doctrinaire. We've all got prejudices deep, you know, and convictions, and we have ideological. But when you're in a you don't burn out everything that you believe. You pick a time, you take a place. Sometimes you take a shot. And rather than just trying to be to know about everything, I think Agnew has a compulsion to say, well, I'm honest. This is what I honestly think. That's just great. He may honestly think something, but anybody who's a vice president, or who's a member of a White House staff, or who's a member of a cabinet, has no views of his own. In any area where we were in, he can't have any.
No.
You know yours, that's the point. He cannot have one. Otherwise, he gets the hell out. That was the Hickel problem. The Hickel problem was not his runner. I thought Hickel was on a moxie, and he's crusty as hell, you know, and he was quite an asset. And the problem was that he felt that he had to express views and feels, which, other than Grant, we had already done. You can't have that. He can't have views of his own. The economic thing, same thing.
Well,
the vice president above all can't do it. Because he's the guy that's next. You know, and they fall for Christ saves it. And also, another thing it does, which I think is very difficult, they know that for 8 years when I was vice president, I never expressed a view that wasn't Eisenhower's. I never expressed it. I had some somewhat different. Burns and Mitchell and I were a cabal. We were just crushing out by Bob Anderson and Steve Sonnier. But anyway, the and Horace Vance. But anyway, about this is that having done that for 8 years, they think that I, as president, am smart enough to know that a vice president is supposed to simply be the echo of the president. And that Agnew wouldn't be doing this without my knowledge and or approval. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the real problem. Don't you think so, John?
Absolutely. I get this all the time.
A lot of people think, well, God Almighty, isn't the president always a vice president? Which I do. But they say, well, Christ, doesn't he know what you mean to say that he didn't know about this?
Yeah. Or
you read this, don't you?
All the time.
Or he's trying to speak with both sides of his mouth?
Yep. Yeah. See, that's the thing. That it goes to your credibility. And that's what makes it so terrifically difficult.
Well,
at the right time, I'd like to get into this with you. I feel that with so much going for you right now, you can't afford to have the sort of debilitating negative or detraction that's involved in the process and the existing arrangement. And I think he just has to be either brought aboard or something. And in all candor, I don't think we've done enough to get him aboard. I think we've all sort of sealed him off and just sort of assumed that nothing could be done there. And I think
on that point, I must say that I think we've done it. I'm inclined to think that unless he's just utterly obtuse, that maybe one mistake we made here, I put Harlow in the Korea, and I thought Harlow was going on around. Harlow said, well, he didn't think Agnew's staff appreciates him going around. He should have gone on around.
I talked to Harlow about that this morning, and Harlow said
Harlow realized it made a move.
Now, he said that Agnew's staff made it almost intolerable for him in Korea. That it was a very difficult situation.
Another thing that he does, which I can't tell him about his staff versus staff is done, but that's a problem everybody's got. But sometimes, I mean, everybody has in that position, I understand. And so many people used to think my staff was pretty dumb all the way because you did what was said. They were certain. But another thing, with his staff and with his Secret Service. George, you can't do it. I mean, when I say you can't do it, I'm not saying you can't fraternize with your staff. Maybe you can. But I never fraternize with the staff. This sit down having a few drinks and all that sort of thing and so forth, it can't be done. You cannot do it in a rush job. Not in that position.
His Secret Service is out of control, unfortunately. There's no discretion shown there, you know.
It's
very heavy-handed. Very heavy security. Way out of all proportion to the politics of it or the need of either one. But they're runaway. You know, there's a...
He gets it to him, right? Well, I'll tell you, I'm about a privatization. I don't think people are all that comfortable. Staff are so much better when the man isn't around.
Well, it's a question of the dignity of the office, I guess.
Yeah.
Vice presidency is the number two office in the nation.
And you get an ambivalence because at times, you know, you have to have that dignity, and he claims it, but at other times he denigrates it, and you just can't operate on that kind of a turn it on, turn it off.
You know, I must say one thing, though, that you've got to hand it to another context to Conway. He's got a lot of guts, and he goes out there and sticks his chin out and gets the hell kicked out.
Yeah.
He did awfully well last week. I don't think the poor guy.
Mills really worked him over last week. Mills did.
I read over his transcript on his press conference Thursday, and I thought it was very impressive. The press didn't begin to record it right then. I've been worried about the statement that 4% unemployment is a myth, and that's been picked up. So I took the trouble to read the transfer, and they have done a job on it.
Sure. That's
no doubt about it.
But let me say there, they picked the wrong man to do the job on. He's going to roll over. They all try to do jobs on it. Conway, I know, is and let Mills, there. Mills is a penny-handy politician, for instance. And the idea of him is he's a candidate for president and so forth. But he's got about as much chance to be nominated on that ticket as King Kimmel.
Yep, there's no question about it.
You could do any question. Job. I mean, you compare him with Muskie, you know. Teddy, he would be far able than any of the others.
He sure introduces an interesting element in that whole race.
Yeah.
I think all of the good going around
sort of
soaking up delegates.
Money.
I think it's all of the good.
No, Harris, I can't believe Harris.
Well, see, he's forced out of Oklahoma.
What the hell is it? How does he run for president? Who's going to
run for president? Yeah, as a populist, he says.
Oh.
And I don't know. I suspect Perot is probably financing all these guys. I don't know where in the world the money's coming from.
Harris. That's a curious.
Well, there was a note in the paper about who was financing him. I didn't.
One thing about it was, of course, is that Harris, being forced out of Oklahoma, is a rather salutary thing.
Sure.
Here was one of our most vicious critics. He can't even get his own party.
Yeah. It throws.
He's always going to run for Republican.
Well, that's the point. See, they all thought he was a pushover. And it's a little bit like the Texas situation.
No, it's like Evans.
Yeah.
He's tough.
Yeah. So that Republican nomination isn't worth quite as much.
He'll give it to Bud again.
It could be. He wants it. Well, he did want it against Harris. I don't know whether he wanted it against Evans or not.
Tenacious Bud with all that very nice, wonderful manners. Tenacious Bud.
Yeah.
Wants to win. He might go, and he might do well. If you got a sweep going, he'd win. Even, you see, if you run extremely well at the presidential level, in Oklahoma, our candidate would win.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point. Even against Evans. Because that's one state I did reasonably well in.
Interesting problem.
Well, go ahead.
McCracken has asked for an appointment with you, and I don't know. I'm trying to find out what.
I have talked to him. What he's talked to me about is his own position, you know, his desire to return to teaching, and I personally think he should not, because I think it would look like we're flat and screwed up and so forth. And so I said, well, you want to stay? I've asked him to stay at least in the semester break, you know, in February, which he ought to be able to do. But of course he should have an appointment anytime he wants.
Well, I don't know whether he is going to renew that or what, but I'll try to find out.
Sure.
Just,
when you talk to him, has he talked to you about his planning to change?
He had some time ago, but not recently.
Well, you could just say that I just happened to mention parenthetically that I felt very strongly that he should stay. Or don't you think you should?
Yeah, I do.
I just feel this, that what the hell, after all, McCracken is here. I don't know. We just may be wrong to settle on the economy. I say we, all of my hard advisors, and we might be right. But in any event, at this point, we cannot give any indication that we have a lack of confidence in ourselves. Right? But be sure he knows before he comes in that he ought to stay. I mean that's how I feel. Of course, I suppose a lot of this attitude of these people in here, congressmen, senators, my guess is that, and this is a commonly clear that he has expressed from time to time, my guess is that Arthur puts him on. That's a lot of backroom talking to these guys.
Arthur's done a lot of damage with this income policy and the confidence line.
Oh, sky's over. And he said it's turned extremely damaging. That's why I want to have Connolly and you do the senators. As a matter of fact, so that we complement them a little bit more, split the senators. You take half of them, and Connolly take half of them. And you take half of the House members, and you take half. You don't spread the thing around. I think 19 senators together is too damn many anyway. I think 8 senators, 9 senators apiece. What do you think, John?
Yeah.
And sort of select out the two. I talked to Timothy's in the room at the time. And let's get that worked out. That's an awfully good plan. I just think getting these people in, George, and then following up with a little fact sheet. That's about the including that political gig. The party of war.
We might try the 19 together. Connolly and I could both talk to them. Senators may feel that if some get Connolly and some get me, the ones who get me are sort of slighted.
No. I do not think that's a problem, because the ones who get you are getting a body house. And the ones who get Connolly are getting the Treasury Department. What do you think, John? Do you think there's a problem?
No, I'm inclined to think that George and John make a nice combination, though.
Yeah.
And John can pump in some of the gutsy political stuff, and George can give him the economists, facts and logic and
all
that.
Maybe the two of you should do the senators together.
They're all run
off.
Yeah.
And then divide the House members.
Yeah. I think that's a good combination.
Good.
We testified together a few times earlier in the year. We didn't have any trouble at all.
Now, when you bring them down with the senators, that's up. If you want to use it, you could use
I don't think that's
no, I was saying if you wanted to use either the library or they're not or that other room over there, you could certainly use it. Both are always available. Either the library or the map room, whatever you want. Another way to do it, of course, Connolly's got to have a little bit of room. Come down to the Treasury Department. That's what I would be. If Connolly comes, I think you ought to go over to his shop. Two of you can get it. Never hesitate to use either of those two rooms. No, I'm pressing one particularly, the math room or the library. Because I'm never in it. Henry Lurie would agree on sometimes.
You got anything else, sir? It's my list. The exception of campaign spending reform, which we'll cover with you at a later time. It's coming along. We're making a little progress there. Toward lifting the restrictions on contributions and so on, there's going to be some restriction on spending, but it looks like it'll be workable. There's a bad House bill. We've got to get around that.
Boys, I understand that we have to see
All right.
Good to see you.